Ravens getting ready for the Cowboys this Saturday night. John Harbaugh just announced that everybody that didn't play in preseason game one will not be playing in preseason game two. That
was I'm going to go ahead and announce they won't be playing in preseason game three either.
No, they will not. So it's the same cast of characters, which includes offensive line. That's, you're not going to see Ronnie Stanley. You're not going to see Tyler Linderbaum. You may see Daniel Falele and Andrew Voorhees. That being said, so when we get to week one and the starting offensive line is out there, assuming everybody's healthy, how do you feel about this line?
I mean, I feel good about the five-man starting unit. I honestly don't feel super great about one through eight the way we probably have in some years past. Nope Boom's an interesting guy to me, and he's played in the league, and he's held his own. So, but outside of that, I don't really know what they have. I'm not sure they entirely know what they have, and this is the time of year to start figuring that out. But I think this unit, an injury could put them into some perilous situations. I'll put it that way. Like, they are potentially an injury away from this becoming an area of concern. In no small part, because the guy who would have been the next man up at every position is now making a lot of money to play for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah, in terms of the starting five, I have no reason to have pessimism when talking about them, because they were really solid last year. And is it reasonable to expect that Roger Rosengarten is going to be better in year two than as a rookie? Absolutely. Is it reasonable to expect Falele could at least be status quo, if not be better than last year? Yeah. Linderbaum's in a contract year. You think he's going to want to ball out and potentially make an all-pro season? Absolutely. Voorhees, last year was essentially his rookie season because he missed his rookie season with the combine injury. Stanley, the caveat with him is always going to be health, but he was a heck of a lot better than we thought he would be last year. So in terms of the starting five, I'm fine with him. And it's a good group, and Lamar Jackson's going to make them look even better. But, like you said, Jason, if one or two of them go down, the offensive line becomes a serious concern for me. Especially if it was Stanley.
And I understand what Todd Monken's doing. I respect what he's doing. He's saying what he should be. He's defending his guys like he should. And frankly, they might kind of know that the cupboard's a little bare outside of these starting guards anyway, so you might as well talk them up. But, an injury or Falele struggling.
Regressing.
And Voorhees maybe not being who they think he's going to be. That either guy not being able to get the job done and somebody getting hurt. And then all of a sudden you do start wondering about all those things we talked about earlier in the show and had fun with, pony packages and where they could really experiment even more. You also could be in a scenario where you're curtailing things because you're not sure what you have up front from week to week.
How much does the Emory Jones of it all affect this as well? Emory Jones was drafted in the third round. I think they thought he was going to be a guy that could maybe be a poor man's Pat McCurry, some guard, some tackle. He has yet to see the field. I don't know when he's going to see the field.
It matters because there's not a whole lot of other names that you can spit out there that and have some, could say there's reason to think about upside or reason to think it's more than just a guy or a potential guy. Like, this is a team that for a long time was constantly drafting offensive linemen in the middle rounds, and more. Were at least you'd at least have the Bredesen who you took him a while, but then you had him for a year and a half, and he was better than you thought, and then he went somewhere else.
And like Ben Powers,
I feel like we're at a little bit of an end of a run where again Voorhees and Falele, that's not an extra thing, that's not a development side thing, that's a playing right bleeping now 70 snaps a game thing. So I just don't know about that next wave. We're used to having at least a potential wave. I don't feel that right now.
No, I think Corey Bullock, we heard Todd Monken talk him up earlier in the show. Maybe he's that next guy, but you need multiple. And Emory Jones, when you draft a guy day two, you expect him to be that next wave. But in terms of Jones, guys, at this point, he hasn't practiced. Like, is he a pup candidate?
I don't think he's absolutely giving you real reps. Like, that's for damn sure.
And I think he absolutely is missing at least the first 4 weeks of the season.
That's what I'm saying. So if that ends up happening, he's placed on pup, and then you're a month into the season, he didn't have any OTAs, mini camp, or training camp, this is essentially going to be a redshirt year for him.
Yeah. Is there a scenario, and you know, they keep hyping up David Ojabo, and maybe David Ojabo flash a little bit, and maybe they're hyping him up to deal him somewhere else. Do they trade David Ojabo to get a depth
offensive lineman? Yes. For a legit guy who you think can plug in at guard and center? Like, I don't know, you're going to find a guy who can plug in at all five, but like a legit interior offensive lineman who's played in the league and done some things and held it down. Oh, I wouldn't surprise me at all. Especially if Mike Green is what we think Mike Green is, and if they are as high on Tavius as they seem to be, and he's already a bubble wrap guy. And yeah, no, I could see that.
It's interesting, some of the things to pay attention to as we watch that game on Saturday, and we'll be talking about it more during the week, but obviously, because the Vincent kid, the other kid they drafted, he does not, and he looks like a complete project. Like, he's not ready for, they don't want to put him out there when real bullets are flying.
Correct.
Yeah, that's an ugly situation. Hey, coming up next, by the way, Ravens done on the practice field. They play the Cowboys, as we said, on Saturday. Chris Horton, Zach Gore, they spoke yesterday. What did they have to say as they get ready for preseason game week number two? We'll hear from them next. Purple Rain here on The Fan.
You know, I just think Tay's got to come out and continue to do what he's done in college, what he's done his entire career. And as a punt returner, the thing I stress a lot, man, it's about fielding the ball. It's about, you know, making the right decisions. And here's a guy that in college, he did that. He made the right decisions. And those plays will pay off, because the other 10 guys that are on the field are going to do their job in block form and make sure that we get those yards.
That's Chris Horton, special teams coordinator for the Ravens, talking yesterday about his punt returner, LaJonte Wester. And I say it's their punt returner because last year they had four guys who couldn't do the job, and Wester looked supremely better than all of them.
You got four returners, you got none. Yeah, it's like quarterbacks.
Yes. LaJonte Wester, assuming health, and we always have to say that, I guess, he's going to be the guy, and he was impressive Thursday.
I mean, as preseason debuts go, especially on a team that has this much star power and with so few star players actually playing, because despite whether Harbs wants to hear it or not, they're in Super Bowl or bust mode. For him to be that electrifying, I mean, it was captivating. Like, it was wild, man. Like, I was like, I kind of don't believe what I'm seeing here. Those back-to-back returns like that. Like, and then to show up down the field, you know, beating people down the sidelines and showing some hands and some vision, and I don't think he's going to be called on to catch too many balls. But still, for him to have a night like that with the spotlight being so much on him, because again, as we've documented, there's not a whole lot of drama here. There's not a whole lot of room at the end in terms of position battles and roster fights and all that stuff. It was a tremendous debut. And I think, you know, he plays this game, and then maybe he doesn't play the third game. Maybe that's enough.
It was just an element that was sorely lacking from this football team last year. And is he going to have a punt return for a touchdown every single time? No. But this helps change field position, and it takes a lot of pressure off the offense, where they don't have to go 90 yards. And maybe it gets it to around midfield, and you get 45-yard drive. Special teams, it's a critical element of football, and the Ravens special teams last year just weren't good at all.
Well, that includes the coverage teams, and here's Chris Horton talking about the team's struggles in return coverage in practice, helping them during the game.
You know, the practices, it just gives us a better idea. We come out, we see we're going against someone else, and it just allows us to, are we in the right spots? Are we making the block? Are we doing the things with the pads on that's going to spring blocks, right? Kickoff return is about being on the right angles, being on the right spot, and blocking guys. And I thought in the game we did that for the most part, right? You look at Keaton. I thought Keaton had some good returns, and, you know, we're just going to run that. We're going to run that play vertical. I thought when Ali came in, it was the exact same play, and the play just hit downhill. So it just gives us an opportunity to look at ourselves, all right, make the corrections from the practice and bring it to the game.
Obviously just one preseason game, but their coverage teams were not good a year ago either.
And look, again, there were plenty of people who were out there for some of those joint practices who said it wasn't great on the special teams part of it all. So games are what matter. I understand that. But you also tend to play like you practice. So no one's sitting here saying mission accomplished, fait accompli. Like they've, you know what I mean? They're now, their special teams now across the board are good. But when you do have a night like that where individuals stand out, but the entire collective stands out in terms of coverage and return, I think what it does do is when some of these guys get cut or end up on the practice squad or on waivers or whatever, and the core special teamers start taking it over and you see more of the starters involved in special teams, because some of them are, it kind of throws the gauntlet down to them a little bit.
Sure. Iron sharpens iron, right, Jason?
Would be one
you heard
way to
that
put
before?
It.
Yeah. No, it's on a shirt.
I think I read that in a fortune cookie once.
Yeah. I mean, it gets those guys to try to elevate their game. And it's a good, the back end of the roster is where guys make their bread in terms of special teams. And there's positions to be made. The Ravens lost a couple of their six-round corners, and that opens up some spots. And those guys, if you want to be active on game day, you got to be good on teams.
More from Chris Horton. He talks about Keaton Mitchell on returns.
I think for a guy like Keaton and a guy, any returner for that matter, right, that did not return in college, you know, those guys were too valuable for their offense, right? But here, man, it's like he's willing to do whatever it takes, and he has developed. And this plays a little bit different now, right? A lot of things happen a lot quicker. If a guy misses a block, now it's that cover guy right on the returner. So these plays, they hit downhill a lot quicker. But his development, he's fine. He's done a great job. Look, we saw him back there last year. He has success for us. We'll continue to have success. The better we get at blocking, the better we'll get at returning the football.
I don't know that I'd call what he did last year returning success necessarily, but he does have the burst back. We've seen that.
We weren't sure we were going to see him last year. I mean, that was a catastrophic injury. It happened later in the year.
Sure. Could he give them something? We've talked about how we think there's going to be more kickoff returns this year because what the touchback's at 35. Could Keaton Mitchell turn himself into a bit of a weapon returning kickoffs?
I would not be worried about curtailing his use there because I don't, you know, again, as great as he looks, I just don't know that he fits into this backfield a whole lot. And if they don't trust you in pass protection, they're not going to use you a whole lot. We saw that when he sprung on the scene as a rookie, as much as he provided an element of surprise, and as much as, let's face it, back then they didn't have a running back room this deep, they still tread lightly with him because there was reason for trepidation. So, yeah, I let him return all the kickoffs.
Any way you can get Keaton Mitchell a football in space, you should do it. And kickoff return is definitely one of those areas. And I think I'm really anxious to see how much of an uptick we're going to see, because the touchback at the 35, man, you can't be kicking it through the end zone every time.
One more from Chris Horton. Talks about his kicker, Tyler Loop, and he wants consistency from him.
The thought process is for us to just be consistent, right? I talked about this last week. In the last 2 years, 80% of our kicks, PATs and kicks included, came from under 40 yards. So we want to be good at the 80%. And we're working on that process for those longer kicks. Again, he has the leg strength to do that, but let's be good at where we need to be good at first.
Tyler Loop today, for what it's worth, according to our friend Jonas Schaefer, was 7-for-9 on field goals, missed from 46 early and from 48 on a rush attempt late, but 7-for-9 today.
And he's not going to be perfect. There's going to be misses. There's going to be misses between 40 and 50. You want those to be obviously as minimized as possible. You want the missed extra points to be as minimized as possible. And you want him to avoid any sort of ruts. And to this point, that's exactly what he's done. He had the one bad day at practice when Bone was there, came right back.
Bone's fault.
Was hitting him from 50 the next day. Misses one, you know, pulls it with one he would want back mechanically and otherwise, responds by making one beyond 50. So I think they're very comfortable with where he is. And again, the reality of that position is there's going to be a lot of guys on the street at any point in time who have done the job, at least to some degree at the NFL level before, who are only a phone call away.
For sure, and you know he has the leg, but to Chris Horton's point, you got to hit the layups. If you're 40 and in, you have to make all of those kicks. And then as you get deeper and you gain more trust, then we'll see the 50-plus yarders.
I guess according to the beat guys, he hit a 67-yarder today. So big leg from the looper. Let's hear one.
It's humid out there. The ball carries.
One more. Let's hear from Zach Orr before we step out. And how about Cut 15, Beltway Ben? Talks about David Ajabo's work with the strength staff.
Yeah, because when, you know, now they're fully they've been fully immersed into the strength program, the performance program. Like, we got a great strength and performance staff here, man. They do a wonderful job. But, you know, when you're injured, your focus is rehab. Yeah, you're getting stronger, you're lifting, but the main thing is you're trying to get your injury stuff handled. Now, when you don't have any injuries, now you can really take your strength and your power and your explosiveness to a whole nother level. And those guys have done it. I mean, those guys were striking people. They've been striking people out here in practice. You saw it in the game. And just the way we want our guys to play here on the edge, it's a physical mindset to start off with.
Could a healthy David Ajabo be a stronger David Ajabo?
Well, I mean, him being able to show that he can stay healthy would be the first step towards showing he could be a productive NFL player. I don't know that we're going to find that out in August.
Ravens and Cowboys, week two of the preseason, Saturday, much closer to the start of football that matters. But coming up next, back to the Orioles. They lost 1-0 last night. Baltimore Baseball Tonight is at 5:30 this evening. Bob Haney, Mike Bordick, live from Pickles. And coming up next, we're joined by another member of our BBT coverage. It's Ryan Ripken, who joins us next here on The Fan. Orioles lose 1-0 last night. They're back in action tonight at 6:30. BBT live from Pickles. Bob Haney, Mike Bordick at 5:30 here on The Fan. And let's talk to another member of our BBT coverage as we head out to the Window Nation Fan Guest Hotline. It's Ryan Ripken. And Ryan, thank you as always for your time. We appreciate it. Let's start with some good news. How about Mean Dean last night?
Yeah, you know what? Dean was mean on the bump, man. He looked good. And, you know, first inning has always – it's always felt like, right, the long ball or the first inning or one big inning for Dean. And after the first, after giving up that one run, he was spectacular, right? And, you know, that's the case of Dean when I talk about, you know, when I say what his ceiling could be. That doesn't mean that that's where he is right now. But you have to have the talent. You have to have the ability to stretch into the seventh, eighth inning of games. And he's had a lot of those and had great outings in the process. But what's held Dean back at times has been maybe that one big inning or making a mistake or just having that one just bad outing altogether where you kind of scratch your head and you maybe contemplate. But for stuff and upside that he has, when he's on, he can do what he did last night. Now, unfortunately, though, Dean's not swinging the bat. So he can't help himself in this case, but he did everything he could to help the Orioles get a dub last night.
Well, he probably couldn't have swung the bat worse than some of these guys if he tried. And this is a super hard sport. I appreciate that. But I just wanted to run something by you here, Ryan, because I know that you are generally pretty optimistic. And the Orioles are selling that they have a core here and they're not far away from competing. But I'm just going to go through the position groups and tell you where they stand in war. Mm-hmm. By position on Baseball Reference. First base, -0.8, 18th. Second base, -0.9, 22nd. Shortstop, 1.5, 9th. Third base, 0.4, 12th. Outfield, -4.1, 26th. Catcher, -0.7, 21st. Do you think this team is close to competing?
I do think that they're close to competing in a couple of ways, though, I'll kind of break down. Because, yes, I understand. I mean, the record is what it is. I think some of the stats when it comes to guys, while, yes, they can paint the picture of what's going on, it doesn't tell the full story. And not making excuses for it, the Orioles have been beaten up in a lot of different ways, and that hurts guys getting into a rhythm. You know, and for the Orioles in general, not only have guys not gotten into a rhythm, you can just feel that it's been a rough environment. Mm-hmm. Not saying that they don't like each other, not saying that they can't go out there and play through it, but the reality is they haven't. You know, and we saw it last year down the stretch where they had good players on the team, and that's still why, despite them kind of limping to get to the playoffs, they had enough talent to continue to stay above water, you know, to get into the dance, and, you know, we know what happened. But I do want to emphasize, when you're not in a good headspace and things aren't going right in a year, it doesn't mean that your talent or your future can't be bright. And I'll use an example real quickly because I've been following the hottest team in baseball, the Brew Crew, mm-hmm. the Milwaukee Brewers.
Yep.
I got to know Andrew Vaughn over the years. You know, a couple times, mutual friend. Shout out Gavin Sheets.
Yep.
And Vaughn, talented hitter. But when he was in Chicago, he looked lost.
Yes.
And so lost that he got demoted down to AAA and then got traded to Milwaukee, and where he felt like, all right, what's this guy going to do moving forward? Well, since he got called up to the Brewers, he's only hitting .347 in 27 games. The Brewers are 24-4, and he has 32 RBIs and 8 home runs with an OPS of like 1,000, yeah. right? And for me, that's the product of maybe it's a better culture, new environment, and he's in a way better headspace. So I think the bigger question here, Jason, is not, you know, can this team compete yet next year? The talent for me is there to compete. Do you have the infrastructure that you need to allow these guys to develop, if that makes sense? Mm-hmm. I think that is going to be the most important thing going into 2026.
Well, Ryan, it's been fun seeing Jackson Holliday make huge strides year over year, but right now it seems like maybe he's hit a bit of a wall since the All-Star break, 23 games. He's got a .577 OPS. Would you be opposed to dropping him in the lineup to have him get going and then put him back in the leadoff spot?
I'm for letting him continue to figure it out up there, to be honest. You know, especially where the team is at. I always think that failure, adversity, is going to teach you a lot. And for this case for Jackson, it's a reminder, he's very young. And two, this is his real first full season in the bigs, where this is where you're really going, like I like to call it, like you're going through it. And people consider August the dog days. Mm-hmm. I know June is where it kind of starts to hit for a lot of guys as well. This is needed for him. But in no shape or form for me especially. You know, if the Orioles were in the hunt here, I'd say maybe that would be different. You know, but I think that it's good if you have a plan for this guy to be your leadoff guy in the future. You know, keep him in a spot where you want him to be. Show that confidence in the player too. You know, I like to listen around and follow as well. I just mentioned Milwaukee. I'll give one more example. Dave Roberts talked about in the Dodgers when Mookie Betts was going through it, not playing well. And they said, you got to move Mookie down. You know, would you consider it? And they said, well, you know, we have a system here. You know, we have a list of guys where they're comfortable. And I also believe in where we are. Now, if things change, injuries happen, yeah, they'll make some changes. But it is important for our players to go through it. And if we can do that, it's going to ultimately benefit the players. I think in this case for Jackson, I like him at the leadoff spot. I'm rocking with him. And if I'm the Orioles, I'm doubling, tripling down on that we're working through this together, and you're going to get every opportunity to prove that you're our leadoff guy going into 26.
We're talking with Ryan Ripken, Inside Access here on The Fan. Ryan, the Orioles lineup isn't out yet today, but I feel like it's probably going to be some combination, Noda, Johnson, Carlson, Allen, Jeremiah Jackson. Like, it's a, and no disrespect, baseball's hard, but these are guys that are sort of 4A guys. As you come at it from a different perspective than us, but I think a lot of fans are frustrated by what they're seeing in the outfield. Are you?
I think what fans are the most frustrated with, and at least one question that I would have, is, you know, when are you going to give your own guys mm-hmm. in your system a little bit more of a run? You know, and that's not to say, because Daniel Johnson, DJ, actually, and I go back to the Nationals organization, super toolsy guy, you know, and has been around and trying to stay around, and people have obviously thought that he hasn't latched on enough to be an everyday guy. But I think he can bring value. But that's not the point if these guys can bring value, because each player can. And maybe you find something there, like we've seen with other teams, because the examples, Ryan O'Hearn was DFA'd, traded to Baltimore, became a focal point here for the last couple of years and traded. And then Brent Rooker out there with the Athletics. But having said that, it's more about when are you going to give a harder look at what you have. And there are guys in AAA right now that I think have earned that right to see what they can do. And after a while, if you don't give them that chance, you know, they might have to question, do you think that I'm not good enough? And that's a psychological game that I don't like. So I think that, to me, I think if it's fair to say, Ken, that's where fans go to. We have guys there. We've heard we've had good players in the minors. Why not see them?
Yeah.
And I know, take the business out of it. Beavers and Basayo should be here soon. That's a whole different conversation. But I think for the Orioles, that is a good question to ask, because what do you tell guys when you come through the system? You say, hey, you work hard, you do the things, you keep grinding. You should get a chance to showcase and prove that if an opportunity arises. Felt like a lot of the opportunities have come up, but those guys haven't gotten those chances, and that's something that I wish wasn't the case.
Ryan Ripken, thank you, sir. As always, we appreciate your time. We'll chat next week.
All right, guys. Appreciate you. Have a good week.
Coming up next, by the way, Mike Sando is going to join us at 5 o'clock. He comes out with those quarterback tiers every year, talking to NFL people, and Lamar Jackson making his first appearance in Tier 1. He'll join us at 5 from The Athletic. But coming up next, as the rest of the division prepares for Week 2 of the preseason, we'll hear from Kevin Stefanski, Mike Tomlin, Joe Burrow. It's Northern Exposure next here on The Fan.
Yeah, like we kind of talked about, I think we have a standard for that position, and really every position, but certainly the quarterback position. There's a standard by which we play and how we play and how we operate and how we take care of the football and those type of things. So there are things that Shador can clean up. He will clean up. But by and large, I thought the operation was really good. And that's important when you have different guys in there. There were some guys, you know, playing for us that had recently gotten on campus, you know, so getting them up to speed can be a challenge. But I think the guys did a really nice job. And
that, if I'm not mistaken, is two-time NFL Coach of the Year, Kevin Stefanski, talking about the standard.
Sounded like a JV bocce ball coach.
At quarterback for the Cleveland Browns. By the way, Shore Sanders, who did look good in preseason game one, hurt his oblique today, will not be playing in preseason game two.
We might be getting a whole lot of
Dylan Gabriel.
Well, Snoop.
Snoop?
Oh, that's right. Hey. Snoop's
Gabriel's
there.
Gabriel's still banged up.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's right. Snoop.
I might have
there.
To get on that one. Tomorrow's one event. I might have to fade the Browns on tomorrow's one
Pro
event.
Bowl quarterback.
I've got a prop I really liked that I was going to give out in overtime, but I could probably save that Beltway, Ben. Might have to fade the Browns. Yeah, I mean, look, they were running Deshaun Watson out there. So, I mean, when Dorian Thompson Robinson started games for
DTR.
Them.
DTR.
Yeah, I don't know about the standard, but I do know that, like, by the middle of the season, at the latest, Shador Sanders will be the best quarterback on their roster, and he'll be playing.
The standard, they always have that Browns jersey when they came back to the NFL in 99. They
had like the 50 names on it?
Yeah, 72 quarterbacks. Yes. The standard is horrific quarterback play. Horrific.
They had a few years of
Brady Kozar. The standard is that's where quarterback careers go to
die.
I'm
saying since 99.
Yeah, no, I'm saying. I was going to say they had like a little run of Brian Sipe and a little run of Bernie Kosar. Beyond
that's
that, trash. Trash. The Browns will take on the Eagles this weekend. Let's go from there to Pittsburgh. And Mike Tomlin talks about their preseason opener.
You know, it was really a good evening's work. We got put in a lot of situations and got a chance to watch people perform in them. 2-minute drive before the half, kind of highlighting some of that. I thought we did a nice job of not beating our own butt. We kept pre-snap penalties virtually to a minimum. I think we had one. We played a pretty clean game for a first time out. We gave a lot of people a lot of opportunities, and that's what this is about. It was good to see some offensive players tackling on special teams, defensive players blocking on special teams. We'll comb through that really closely. And to top it all off, man, we kind of got through the game virtually injury-free. I think Cam McCutcheon got taken out with a soft tissue injury, maybe a hamstring that needs to be evaluated. But other than that, we're pretty clean. And so productive night on a lot of fronts. And obviously we'll comb through the tape, man, and learn from it in a lot of ways, both players and coaches, and hopefully be better the next time out.
You know, it's football season when you get to hear from Mike Tomlin. Always a good listen. They beat the Jaguars despite a 70-yard field goal. They take on Tampa this weekend.
I think they are a viable football operation that if they don't beat themselves – are going back to the playoffs. Chase. And then they'll lose, but that's fine. I just need them to get into the playoffs.
Yeah.
Jason, what the heck's happening with Cam Hayward?
Yeah, that's a weird one. I guess he says he told them if he had a Pro Bowl year.
That's why you negotiate a contract. That's why you put it in writing. That's why you have an agent. That's why these things are filed and are legal paperwork that are binding. I mean, if like,
is this a nothing burger for you? It gets done.
I think they'll navigate it. I think it'll be under the rug by week one. They'll have to throw some more money at him.
Finally, let's hear from Bengals quarterback Joe Burrow, who felt like they had a strong preseason opener.
Yeah, I missed the first throw, so that was a little disappointing. But after that, we locked in and had a couple good drives.
Short and sweet. The Bengals did play some of their starters as Jamar Chase had a touchdown catch. I think he had 4 for 77 and a touchdown in a preseason
game.
They
ran him out there against the Eagles, and that's a team where, like, I wouldn't be tempting fate. I suspect he does it again this weekend.
Is this to try to prevent that? They're notorious slow starters.
I mean, how much can this really? Like, how much can it really do that? And your defense still might give up 45. So in the end, it might not matter. Like, I think he's going to run some people out there again on Saturday.
I definitely think that's going to be the case. I don't think this was a one and done.
No.
And Joe Burrow, I think he's already played more in the preseason in that game than his entire career. Ken, you're right. They're always 0-2. Every single year you're trying to dig out of a hole. It can't happen this year.
You know, it's funny. I think Harbs, and I'm reading his mind here, but I think he wanted to play some starters this week, but then he's reminded probably of what happened to J.K. Dobbins a couple years ago, and you're like, the juice ain't worth the squeeze, man.
No, I think I said it last week. I'll say it again. I think the Bengals are playing with fire.
Coming up next, one of the annual things we look forward to when it comes to the NFL is the annual Mike Sando piece on the NFL quarterback tiers. It is out. And for the first time, Lamar Jackson is at tier one.
I'm sure it made his year. It probably means much more than that MVP he was stolen from him.
Mike Sando from The Athletic joins us next here on The Fan.